This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org.
You are what you eat.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. The Humane Society has sued the Department of Agriculture for allowing sick or crippled cattle to enter the food supply. That's after the largest beef recall in history 2 weeks ago. Today, a Senate subcommittee holds a hearing into how the department handled the recall. Our D.C. Bureau Chief John Dimsdale says some senators will press the department to release more information to the public in future food recalls.
When news of the record meat recall hit the headlines, consumers were unable to get a list of what stores and restaurants had bought the beef. Caroline Smith DeWall at the Center for Science in the Public Interest says the Agriculture Department considers store distribution lists proprietary commercial information.
The press release the USDA sends out communicates only with the first buyer. And if you're a consumer, you don't necessarily have any way to tell if, in fact, that meat was part of the recall.
Consumer groups are asking the Agriculture Department to change the policy, but Patrick Boyle with the American Meat Institute says publicizing distribution lists will only confuse consumers.
If the USDA were to come out and say this product was sold to such and such a grocery chain, that leaves consumers with the impression that maybe in the Northeast that product was distributed when in fact the supplier only sent it to stores within that chain in the Southwest.
USDA officials are expected to tell senators today the department is considering changing its disclosure policies later this year. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And on Wall Street Wednesday, the Dow closed up 9 to 12,694, the Nasdaq closed up 9 to 2353, and the S&P closed flat at 1380. The bond auction market that's vital to funding everything from road projects to student loans is still struggling to survive. Now, federal regulators are being urged to get behind a plan that some bond sellers are pushing as a short-term fix. Marketplace's Bob Moon says it would allow them to enter the bidding to buy back their own IOUs.
Maybe the fix is as simple as just taking it all back, the way Gilda Radner used to on Saturday Night Live.
Never mind.
That's what bond issuers could tell investors. By sweeping their cards off the table and declaring the game over, the bond sellers could escape the shock of hundreds of millions in interest penalties as their auctions fail to attract any takers lately. University of Maryland economist Peter Morici says, hold on. Huge investment banks have led customers to believe the banks would always step in to keep the auctions running smoothly. Now he says they want to change the rules in their favor.
Going in there and manipulating markets is not a good way to honor your moral or legal obligations.
A coalition of bond issuers wants the Securities and Exchange Commission to shield their circular bidding from being considered market manipulation. Duke University securities expert Jim Cox thinks looming economic damage might persuade the SEC.
Given the breadth of the problems, my guess is this is almost bordering on the too big to fail principle.
But Professor Morici argues a corrupt marketplace deserves to fail, though he says he's come to expect regulatory laxity. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, where you can choose up to 4 customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. And by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, introducing ThriveQ, an online tool that helps you know where you stand on your path to retirement. More ThriveQ.com. Middle East Reporting is supported by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org.
You probably like at least a couple of the people you work with, but are you really friends with any of them? Olenka Kasperchik is a doctoral candidate at the Ross School of Business in Michigan. Her research shows we're not as chummy at the workplace as we used to be, and that makes us different from the rest of the world.
Well, so we find that in 1985, 50% of Americans had someone close, so a friend at work.
Mm-hmm.
That number is actually down to 30% by 2004. So in 2004, only 30% of Americans identify a friend in their workplace.
What happened? Is it that we're not keeping the jobs as long as we used to, or what's going on?
So actually, we looked at the time we work, with the hours, with family, with any other obligations that prevent us from socializing outside of work. But that's not the case. So we basically found that between 1985 and 2004, there is no significant decrease or change in those other constraining factors. So our theory is that basically there is some increasing isolation that's going on. So people in general socialize less, and coworkers are just part of how we socialize less with each other.
This is not, I see from your research, this is not the case in other places, and you've studied two other countries, I see.
Yes, exactly. So we looked at Poland and India as countries of comparison to what's happening in the US. And Americans socialize with 50% of their network, or even less, around 50% of the network of their colleagues, whereas in Poland, that's the case for 74%. In India, it's even bigger, because that's 78%.
It's just because it's too hard, or too much energy, or something.
So our explanation for it was basically that it's all about culture. So the U.S. has been socialized in a culture where you really keep separate the professional from the personal.
What, Olenka, is the most extreme difference between the U.S. and, say, on the other end, India? Because that seems that those are the two most extreme.
We asked our respondents about having gone on a vacation with a coworker. For Indians, they have spent already at least one vacation with 45% of their coworkers. That's almost half.
Wow.
Whereas for Americans, that percentage is only 6.
And that's not a romantic thing. It's just we're friends and we're going to go away for the weekend together.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. When your boss tells you, let's go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do it in this country.
Olenka Kasperchik is a doctoral candidate at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. So next week, we launch our very special project that's focusing on the Middle East. Scott Jagow will be broadcasting live from Cairo. Hope you can tune in. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.